This is Hockey Central with Jeff Merrick, Anthony Stewart, and Justin Bourne on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, T-minus 1 week and 3 hours from the NHL trade deadline. Happy family day to most of you here in Canada. Happy Monday to all those watching south of the border. This, of course, Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, simulcasted on Sportsnet 360 and the NHL Network. Clearly, I'm not Jeff Merrick. I'm filling in. I'm Nick Alberga, joined alongside Anthony Stewart and Justin Bourne. Producer Matt Marchese, technical op Vic Palladian behind the glass. And you know, it's kind of a riveting time of year with all that's transpiring in the trade world. But Shea Weber, like in GIF form, Stewie, describe this to me, this situation.
Well, I think yours maybe was better than mine, but yeah. He's back. He's arisen. He's risen from the dead. And it's a bit peculiar how originally he's diagnosed for 4 to 6 weeks and he's back within, what is it, a week, 10
yeah.
days?
Mm-hmm.
So that just shows what type of character that he has, basically, you know, saying that, hey, you know what? He could take the rest of the season off. There were some questions about his career and he's back a week later. So he's the ultimate competitor. He's not quitting in on the season. So hopefully that's going to motivate Montreal now to get back into this race. They got some work to do now. I think they're sitting probably 8 points out, 9 points out.
Yeah, they're finished. Yeah.
So okay, leave me alone here. I'm trying to get, trying to rally
it's
up the Montreal
duty.
Fans. Hopefully they can come back for this final push. There is 20 games left.
All right. Should note as well that Eric Engels of Sportsnet down in Montreal will join us in 25. And again, we'll do our best to dissect this whole situation. This guy was 4 to 6 weeks done, maybe done for the season, done for the career perhaps. And now Shea Weber potentially could return for Montreal tomorrow night. Should note as well, Tom Fitzgerald's been a busy dude the last 24 hours or so. The interim GM of the New Jersey Devils will join us at 1:25 Eastern time. We'll dive into that. But right now we're going to dive into the Fast Five boys and we'll start in Toronto. 3 goals in 1:31 in just a dismal night for the Maple Leafs on the back-to-back. Justin, we can start with you. Your thoughts on the Maple Leafs in that 5-2 loss to Buffalo on Sunday night.
I thought, Sheldon Keefe alluded to this after the game, but just that he thought they didn't have it 10 minutes into the game. They basically thought there was nothing there. And, you know, as much as you expect more from your team every night, I think it's pretty fair to say that a team that is depleted with injuries, you know, in the back end of a 3-4 nights, and they look tired, they've been sick, and it showed. And I think that happens too when you have your top guys playing as many minutes as they did against Ottawa. So they just look like there's nothing left in the tank.
It's Alex Kerfoot. I'm still trying to figure out sort of what happened in that goal. Rasmus Sandin got worked by Kyle Pozo a bit, but just you sort of felt for Frederik Andersen last night, didn't you, Stewie?
Yeah, he played well the first period. He made a couple big saves throughout the game. So none of those, again, maybe one of those goals were on him,
yeah.
But especially that Kerfoot play, I think you got to realize as a veteran player, you haven't had a penalty called for you guys yet. You got to take that. You got to get some contact. You got to get some contact now, especially now with the last line of defense being a rookie defenseman. So on that Oposo goal, you know, I'd like for him to sort of step up there and make a veteran play, as they say.
Number two, the New Jersey Devils dealing Captain Andy Green and Blake Coleman goes to Tampa. Andy Green to the New York Islanders. What'd you guys make of that move?
Yeah, I had to take a look and make sure it was the Andy Green that I played against, 10 years ago.
It is.
And Andy Green playing his entire career over 900 games in New Jersey, getting the deal. Getting dealt, and Blake Coleman, who has 21 goals and 57 games. So I'm sure that's the first two of a couple more blocks that are probably going to fall in New Jersey this season now. An odd factor, both players are Miami University alumni. So if there's any more alumni, on the New Jersey Devils team, look to get traded next week here.
We've detected.
I love the value there on the Blake Coleman deal. 1 year left at 1.8 after this season. They gave up a substantial amount, but again, the way Tampa's been turning over prospect after prospect, Justin, it's not the end of the world, is it?
No. I don't know if I should go too into that trade just yet,
yeah.
But the idea is just that for me that I don't think Tampa wins that trade, but I do think that given their situation and their roster and where they're at in terms of their cup hopes, it's a smart trade for them to make right now.
Kings of Leon Draisaitl just ripping it up right now for the Edmonton Oilers, channeling his inner Evgeny Malkin. The Oilers improved to 3-1-0 without Connor McDavid after beating the Carolina Hurricanes. That was a Stanley Cup final back in the day, as we all remember. Justin, your thoughts on Draisaitl, his efforts so far through 4 games?
Man, 10 points through 4 games without Connor McDavid. I think he's got a 12-point lead. He's ahead of McDavid now. I was in the camp that if I was going to vote for one of the Edmonton guys as MVP, it was going to be McDavid, even if the points were fairly close, because McDavid to me is the engine. He's the guy the teams match up with. He's the guy who makes Leon's life easier. So he's the guy. But during this crucial stretch of this season, the run that he's on through four games and with them winning some games is definitely changing my perspective for a guy who's likely to win the Art Ross Trophy at this point.
Do you want to chime in at all?
Leon Draisaitl for Hart.
Yeah, it's he's been incredible. And again, this is what they needed, right? They've got Cassian out now and McDavid, and the beat goes on for the Edmonton Oilers. Good news for them. The Nashville Predators coming back to life. I guess you can sort of incorporate into the Shea Weber gif, former Nashville Predator. But certainly they have the games in hand right now in the Central Division, the Western Conference. They got a lot of ground to make up, but they move within 1 point of a playoff spot. It was a strong weekend for them.
Yeah, they got back-to-back wins over St. Louis, 2-1 wins and 4-3 wins over St. Louis Blues there. They're winners now five of their last seven games, and now they're only 1 point behind Calgary and Arizona. And as you mentioned, they have two games in hand on Calgary and three. So maybe they could be pulling a bit of a rope-a-dope like the Tampa Bay Lightning did in the East. And, you know, in a couple weeks here, they could be, you know, challenging maybe for third place in the conference.
It's all about peaking at the right time, and they're getting the goaltending right now, whether it be from Saros, Pekka or Rinne. Number five and the fifth and final in the Fast Five here, the pride of Burford, Ontario himself, Adam Henrique, scores twice. The Ducks hand the Canucks their fifth loss in their last seven games. What's going on, Justin?
Yeah, that's a fair question. This is a team that's, you know, in a dogfight right now in that top of the Pacific race. They have one regulation win in the month of February right now. This is a crucial time, and it has not been real pretty. So, you know, I do believe in the talent they have there. When I look at the five teams that are sort of in that cluster, I feel like they've got enough to separate themselves from the pack. But you can only play around with so many points here. Losing games to the Ducks at this time of year, that's a pretty big hit for the Canucks.
There's your Fast Five. Is it officially sponsored by Fisherman Friend yet? Or?
Thank you very much for the assist.
We're working on that.
For those people that don't know, the Golden Muzzy here sent a tweet out to the Fisherman's Friend saying, hey, I eat more Fisherman's Friends than Nick Nurse. And the fact is, I do. I eat a pack a day. It's like smoking for me. But
special, get a patch for that,
yeah,
Stewie.
Special thank you to Fisherman Friend for sending a little care package.
I thought it was perfect to bring that up for this family day here at Sportsnet. That's Anthony Stewart, Justin Bourne. I'm Nick Alberga filling in for Jeff Merrick. Back to the Toronto Maple Leafs, of course, was your Fast Five. But three goals in 131, Fast 131, I guess. But it all came unglued, I think, a puck drop in this hockey game. I don't think it was even close, boys. Your assessment on that 5-2 loss for the Maple Leafs?
I guess my big takeaway was that game hinged on one save made on Alex Kerfoot in a 2-2 game. You know, the Leafs didn't have it, and I felt like there are those nights as a player where you know you don't and you know your team doesn't, but you find yourself in the game, and if you find yourself ahead, you're like, all right, I can muster it up to get through this, grab us a point or two. Well, the Leafs made a push at the start of the third. They tie the game up 2-2. Kerfoot gets a backdoor pass and gets robbed. Buffalo goes back down, scores the other way shortly after, and all of a sudden you're just like, okay, tonight's not the night.
I think it was the penalty on Muzzin that led to Jack Eichel's goal. And
they still haven't shown the replay, by the way, on the Muzzin.
No.
But, I didn't see it. We were trying to break it
and
down.
And the one thing, and again, I don't want to harp on the refereeing, but that's a call that you got to let, you know, you got to let that one go, especially when you're calling it from center ice. And, you know, how do you see that? You know, how do you know he didn't trip? There's three or four bodies that are in the way. And I think you got to leave that call up to the ref that's sort of, you know, 10 feet away. So I think that started the downward spiral because, again, it's tough to kill all those penalties in a row. Jack Eichel scores, but this goes down to the dreaded word that I use every single day when describing the Leaf as the details.
Tertiary?
Details is the next one. But
you have other words?
Yeah. But, you know, when that goal gets scored, okay, obviously it's a heartbreaker, but you got to stay focused. You're still in that game. But then now, you know, you're letting two other goals in less than a minute here. The details weren't there. So you could tell from the start of the game there that they weren't really engaged. They probably looked tired playing their third game in four nights. But you got to find a way. It's point season, so you can't really dissect it. You can't really dwell on it too much. You got to start getting points, and it starts tomorrow against Pittsburgh.
The Maple Leafs now 22-11-4 under Sheldon Keefe, and clearly had some choice words after that one last night against Buffalo.
I mean, this is the worst we've been in a really long time. You know, we haven't been able to get the results that I think we're capable of getting, but each game has been a little bit different in terms of what the issues are. Today, like I said, we just looked like we had tired legs all over the ice. We were second to pucks. We didn't close in defensive zone, and as a result, spent way too much time in our own end and let their skill just kind of pick us apart. So this one, it's certainly not a one-off because we haven't really put our game together for quite some time. But this one was different today where we just, as I said, for most of the game, didn't feel like we were in the building at all.
The assessment there by Sheldon Keefe, pretty much bang on. And I do like the fact, and taking nothing away from Mike Babcock, I mean, accountability is a big word I've sort of depicted out of this era so far under Sheldon Keefe. He's going to hold these players accountable. And Justin, simply put, they just weren't good enough in that game.
They weren't. And, you know, I think Keefe's in an interesting situation. You got to look at where he's coming from, too, as a guy who he hasn't coached in the NHL before. Yeah. And, I mean, Stu, you know that best of anyone here, but, like, it's a long season. 82 games, a grind. And if you were to point at the schedule and say, where do you expect that guys might take some nights off? You'd be like, oh, February, after the All-Star break. Like, there's so – the wear and tear catches up. You know, the point of the schedule catches up, and you just – guys aren't going to be their best all the time. And you hope at that time of year to find a way to win games. But they weren't the better team last night, and they didn't look like they had the legs. I wonder, then, if that will change how Sheldon – operates going forward, if he feels that he has stretched out his best players a little bit too much and maybe try to save some legs going forward.
Yeah, it was interesting, and I was thinking about it, like maybe they were counting this as a loss before the game started just based on, you know, the lineup that they were icing. And it was a bit interesting that they called two guys up and Mason Marchman and Korshkov, and putting them in and leaving Gauthier and Timoshov out. So I thought that was a game where what's going to win it? Is it going to be legs? I thought it was more veteran savvy, guys that know what to do, you know, at certain points of the game, killing key penalties. And so it was a bit interesting seeing Gauthier and Timoshov not playing, but Korshkov showed that what he can do, he's a big body that can skate and protect the puck. Marchman was pretty good on the forecheck. It was just a bit odd that they decided to ice that lineup at this point of the season.
Well, I think what they're doing, too, is trying to create some internal competition in their bottom six. And Sheldon Keefe did speak to that as well last night, sort of. You know, they're not there where he wants them to be in terms of depth because, I mean, you have your big boys in the top six, but you need your depth pieces to step up. Like, guys like Alex Kerfoot have not been great for a while. The first, month of the season, the bottom six carried this team for big stretches of time. And the last little while, they've been really, really quiet from an offensive standpoint.
Yeah, and I do think that was part of what they're doing there, bringing those guys in. Yeah. But also just to get some guys in, I think, who are excited. You know, Freddie Gauthier is a guy who sometimes lacks pulse.
He's a goat.
You know, he's some days he doesn't have it. He doesn't have that energy level. And obviously, Spezza is an older guy. You know, the question marks can be there at times. But I understand trying to get some young guys some energy in there. In talking to people about Korshkov, though, and like what he brings to the table, it sounds like he's a guy who can kind of capitalize on mistakes. And when he gets chances, he's good. But he doesn't really drive the bus. Like, he's not a guy who's going to really get out there and make a whole ton happen. So I'm not sure. I don't expect to see a ton of him, but I guess when you're thin and losing, these guys are going to get looks.
Yeah, and that's a good point, too. I mean, Korshkov does score his first NHL goal in his first NHL game. I thought a really good forecheck by Jason Spetz and maybe a bit of a heinous giveaway by Henry Jokiharju on the back end for Buffalo. But they capitalize on that, and I think among the bright spots in a couple of them for the Maple Leafs in that 5-2 loss against Buffalo. But, I mean, desperation is a big word this time of year. That was a desperate effort by Buffalo, and we expected it, right? The Sabres going into that game, guys, were 10 points out of a playoff spot. They get Victor Olsson back in that lineup. The jam he's created this year in his rookie campaign with Jack Eichel, it was expected to me. And then to add to that, I mean, Buffalo and you guys can chime in on the taunting for Jack Eichel to the Leafs crowd there. Because I understand it from that perspective. You're in your home barn, but it feels like a road game. That's got to feel tough on the
team. I'm surprised there wasn't more made of the Eichel interview where he's basically calling out the fan base, right? I'm pretty sure he was based on that, saying, hey, it feels like it's a road game. And, you know, so I'll blame part of the Leaf Nation for coming in, not sitting in the cheap seat, sitting front row, taunting him. That really fired him up to get him going. So, you know, Jack Eichel's, and when you go back and forth with a team like Buffalo, who has offensive weapons, you got to play that game the right way.
We actually have that clip, Jack Eichel in the intermission yesterday.
You guys have won 20 of the last 27 games against the Maple Leafs here in this building. I know some of those came before your time, but what is it about going up against the Maple Leafs in this building that you guys seem to get really up for?
Well, obviously you want to try and protect your home ice. There's a lot of blue and white in the crowd right now, so, you know, it's... feels a little bit like a road game, but you know, it's we got some Buffalo fans here, so just trying to utilize that. And I think we play well in our home building. I think we've done a lot of that lately, and I just want to continue tonight.
My goodness, Sean McKenzie has great hair. That's Jack Eichel, the Buffalo Sabres, his breakdown. Stewie looks away. The breakdown there from Jack Eichel says it all. And I do like sort of that moxie, that confidence that Jack Eichel brings to the table. And I get it from that perspective. Every time the Leafs go into Buffalo, it always seems to be a resounding Leafs Nation blue and white.
Yeah, I thought it was almost funny him being like, there's some Sabres fans here tonight. Like, I'm, you know, that's I mean, calling a spade, but it's also like, you know, hey, we need help in these games here to Sabres fans, I think. As for the taunting, telling Leafs fans to sit down in your own rink, I think it's fantastic that he's doing that sort of thing. That's a lot of personality, but like, not a good look on your own crowd.
Well, the rivalry's alive and well because I had, as you know, the Sabres and Toronto fans going back and forth via Twitter.
Fun.
Some probably the whole drive back home to Toronto. So
fired
it's definitely
up, couple
passionate.
Of
they were passionate. Both fan bases are pretty passionate.
Yeah, a couple pops on family day. I can see how you get just a little fired up. And certainly I had a little troll tweet last night on Jack Eichel.
A couple. You had like five.
I just pointed out that Jack Eichel, taunt or not, has played zero playoff games with zero goals, zero assists, and 0 points. That's all I put out.
But then you go hashtag at Sabres, at Buffalo Sabres, at Sabres alumni, at Sabres,
puts. I'm,
at Terry Pegula.
Yeah, like I even tweeted the Pegula family.
That's
I got to reach my
troll.
Market.
You don't want to troll because eventually they're going to come for you. They come for everybody
eventually. I put the rock, bring it out there, the gif. I'm used to it with Islanders fans. Whoa. I can take it from Sabres fans for sure. So for this Maple Leafs team, guys, the deadline, as I alluded to off the top of the program, roughly now, 1 week away, a very pivotal week. Every week's going to be that way for the Maple Leafs down the stretch. You got Pittsburgh twice. They're 7-2-1 the last 10. I love that Jason Zucker pickup. He's playing on the top line with Sidney Crosby. And then you have Carolina on Saturday. It's the Jim Rutherford week right now for the Toronto Maple Leafs. But these are three huge games. Starts with a game in Pittsburgh Tuesday night, Justin.
Not easy games. That one in Pittsburgh in particular is not an easy game. One thing I know about Sheldon Keefe, and that's his level of preparation, is thorough. And I think that this team has enough time here, a couple of days. I'm sure they've stepped away today. I'm sure they're reconvening tomorrow to, you know, skate and travel and whatever else. But I think that they're going to be able to rise to the level of, you know, better than we saw on this weekend. And they're going to need to be not just better than, but far better than to have a chance in that game. Because Pittsburgh, with that new addition, that's a pretty, that's one of the best teams in the league.
Yeah, you can do all the prep you want, but when you're playing against Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin, two of the top best players in the world, you know, there's only so much you can do. So you can't stop them. You got to do your best to contain them. And the one thing, and I'm going to use the word details, and if you thought it was bad against Buffalo, you know, taking a two-minute nap, you take a two-minute nap against the Pittsburgh Penguins, or you get into penalty trouble, they're lethal, and they can kill you, and they can take you out of the game in half a period, or, you know, either four or five shifts. So they can skate. You know, Toronto can skate with them. They can compete. But they got to pay attention to those details, especially against a Pittsburgh Penguins powerhouse.
This is actually probably the most crucial stretch of the year for their goaltending. Like, Freddie Anderson has been... you know, he's up and down all season. Then he got hurt and he had a rocky stretch. Well, okay. You know, if you're going to be the guy here, this is the time where it's like, we may need to lean on you here. We're playing a very good team and they're going to get some scoring chances and we're going to need above average to, you know, we need our goaltending to be better than their goaltending.
When we talked about the depth in the bottom six, Patrick Hornquist had 3 points from the fourth line last night. So that bottom six has really got to step up and add some stability to the lineup.
Well, and again, we'll get to Tampa later on, but that's part of the reason why I like the Coleman pickup is that he can play on the fourth line, the first line, the second line, the PK. Like, he does everything. And you look in the last couple of years, specifically even teams like St. Louis, they had the luxury of having Alex Steen in their fourth line, Ivan Barbashev in their bottom six. You need guys like that, and you need depth in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And I just think for the Maple Leafs and guys like Marner and Matthews and Tavares, and more so the younger guys and the younger stars at that, it's a real look in the mirror moment when you play Pittsburgh, right? And look at what you want to be, right? And Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, you know, Chris Letang on the back end. These guys are pros. They've won before. They know how to win, and they know to elevate their play. I mean, it's one thing to look at Marner. It's one thing to look at the season Matthews is having. But you got to bear down and do your thing, right? There's a reason why these guys get paid this money, and it's time to step up for everybody involved.
Yeah, it is. It is. But just watch, you know, the fan. I want you to watch, you know, Pittsburgh's play away from the puck. Watch them. They're not getting beat out of the corners. Watch Evgeny Malkin on the back check, turning pucks over, going back on transition offense. So Toronto, but that comes with being a pro, and it takes time. And that's the one thing that, you know, I give Toronto credit for. They're young. They're still trying to find their way. I know they're high paid, but it takes time to learn that 200-foot game and learn to play away from the puck.
And you talk about, like, looking in the mirror. Well, Pittsburgh's been hurt all year.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
You don't get to say, oh, we don't have Riley. They're like, yeah, we've missed some pretty good players too. So that is exactly what you're speaking to, is that when those guys are out, other people step up and everyone plays tight team system, tight team defense. That is a lesson for the Toronto Maple Leafs when it comes to looking in the mirror.
Meantime, Shea Weber back from the dead. Could he play tomorrow night at the Pizza Box? We're going to ask Eric Engels of Sportsnet coming up his thoughts on the Montreal Canadiens going forward. And how long is Ilya Kovalchuk going to be a Hab leading up to the February 24th NHL trade deadline? It's Nick Alberga filling in for Jeff Merrick alongside Anthony Stewart and Justin Bourne. You're listening to Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, simulcasted on Sportsnet 360 and the NHL Network.
Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, welcome back to Hockey Central. Nick Alberga filling in for Jeff Merrick alongside Anthony Stewart and Justin Bourne as we get you set for another slate of games. And it's amazing how quickly the season has gone, that we're, what, a week away from this trade deadline. And good on Tom Fitzgerald, who will join us, the interim GM of the New Jersey Devils, for starting the party yesterday, boys.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, a couple of guys making moves so far this year. Rutherford getting himself his Zucker. So, yeah, it's fun that guys do stuff early. I know the guys who work on trade deadline day may not love it, but we do.
Yeah. Stewie, are you fired up for deadline day?
Yeah. I'll
I heard you're going to be on a panel. That's
my
sources
I'll be working it next Monday, yes. So it'll be a good panel. And
are you TV day?
I don't really have too much to offer. I only
better not wear this.
I know. No. No, I got my other wardrobe. thanks, Deb. I've only been traded once over my whole entire career. Not once in junior I got traded. They tried to trade me in Kingston. I said, if you trade me, I'm quitting. So
that's sick.
Yeah. That's how much clout I had in junior hockey. Yeah. You better not trade me.
Yeah. That's sick. Another team that could be busy between now and February 24th, the Montreal Canadiens. What a last 2 hours it's been. Shea Weber at practice. There's a chance he could play tomorrow. We got to bring in our guest here, Eric Engels of Sportsnet down in Montreal. Double E, thanks so much for hopping on here. Just what's the hoopla been around there? Just the fact that Shea Weber potentially could be back tomorrow for Montreal?
Well, we should probably start talking outside of the terms of potential. I'd be shocked if he didn't play tomorrow.
Wow.
I'd bet a lot of money on him playing tomorrow. I'd bet a good amount of money on Brendan Gallagher, who's been deemed questionable after he suffered a leg injury in the last game and played through the whole thing and missed today with therapy day. And Claude Julien said he's questionable. I would bet a lot of money he's going to play tomorrow. And I asked Claude Julien jokingly, I guess we don't have to ask you who's starting tomorrow. It's going to be Carey Price. And Paul Byron is going to be returning for the first time and to play a hockey game in over 3 months after suffering a knee injury and having knee surgery. And Jonathan Drouin, who had an ankle injury and missed Saturday's game, is suddenly okay, and he's going to play tomorrow too. So, you know, what it tells you is that this team isn't chucking in the towel, which certainly defies not necessarily the mathematics of the situation, but definitely the logic.
So, yeah, I guess I want to hear more about maybe the disparity between what I'm looking at and seeing given the schedule, roster, and standings versus what the Canadians are seeing and what you expect to happen. Like, if they lose the next couple games, will they then say, okay, maybe we're going to change our strategy here? Like, how long are they going to continue to make this push where it looks near hopeless?
I think we should probably stop talking about they and start talking about Mark Bergevin.
Okay.
Because ultimately he's the guy in charge, right? Like, because they, in the terms of the Canadians and Claude Julien, the players, they're going to do what they're paid to do.
Correct.
And that means playing through injury and pain and illness and whatever else it is, because they are hanging on to a belief based on complete intangibles. You know, I asked Carey Price, and I asked Shea Weber and I asked Claude Julien the same question: why do you still believe that you can pull something off improbable? And verbatim, the answer from all three of them was, because crazier things have happened. You know, typically you'd like for them to be able to turn to some internal reasons as for why they could do something that I think all of us know is extremely unlikely, bordering on impossible, knowing that they haven't won more than 3 games in a row all season and have to win, what, 18 of 21 remaining to make the playoffs? I mean, it's at this point, this is the type of situation where the manager, Mark Bergevin, has to intervene and say, guys, I have nothing but respect for the way you're approaching this, and I have nothing but respect for your willingness to sacrifice and play for this organization despite the situation that we're in. But I have to intervene now. And Shea Weber, who's just 2 weeks out from an injury that was supposed to keep him out 4 to 6, who's been through two serious surgeries on separate legs in the last, you know, 18 months and missed so much time and why would you expose him to any further injury? And I understand that Shea is a very proud guy, and he will play, and he's played through tons of pain in his career. I mean, 2 years ago, he played 26 games on a foot that had tendons just completely shredded. But why don't you look at the situation and say, even if the doctors have assured Shea, which Shea said that they've assured him that he can't aggravate his injury further, why would you put him in a situation where if he's missing a step, because he said he's obviously not at 100% and he's playing through pain, if he's missing even a bit of a step, he could be put in a situation where he ends up pasted into the boards because he couldn't get to a puck quick enough and ends up hurting his shoulder at this stage of the season. If this is the type of situation that requires intervention from management. And is it going to take one more loss for them to go down that road? I don't understand really why Mark Bergevin isn't intervening right now.
So I'm of the opinion that they should, go for it and keep everybody. But if they decide to be sellers, after the deadline, who of Thomas Tatar, Ilya Kovalchuk, Jeff Petrie, possibly Shea Weber, Marco Scandello, still being Montreal Canadiens after the deadline?
Yeah, well, Kovalchuk has to go. Provided that this keeps going the way I expect it to and not so much how they expect it to, Kovalchuk has to go. And I understand that it's been a love story in Montreal and that there are people, even people that I really respect in the media, saying that they should keep him. At the end of the day, you look at what's gone on already on the market. I don't have any doubt in my mind that the very worst they'll do in trading Kovalchuk will be a third that turns into a second based on some funny condition of a team that gets him going past one round of the playoffs or whatever it may be. The Canadiens fans who are in love with Kovalchuk and keep saying, keep him and sign him and this and that, like, they are also the same people that are in love with the fact that Canadians have a consensus top three prospect pool. And the reason they have a top three prospect pool, and everybody considers them to have a top three prospect pool is because of guys like Alex Romanov and Jesse Ylönen and, Jaden Struble and guys that they've picked in the second round. So you don't ignore that possibility just because this guy's come in here for 3-4 weeks and really dazzled everybody with how good of a teammate he's been and what he's done on the ice. If there's 4 or 5 teams, and I know that there are, that are interested in his services, you should be able to redeem something that could really help your future. So that's one guy that's got to go if they're going to get into sell mode over the next few days. Another guy, obviously, given the returns on Zucker and Blake Coleman, is Thomas Tatar. If Blake Coleman, with 1 year left at a really digestible cap pick, can bring in the kind of haul that he brought into New Jersey, Thomas Tatar, who's got 20 more points and has 1 year left on a very digestible deal at, well, it's 5.3, but $500,000 remains on Vegas's cap. Are they going to sign him a year from now? Probably not. They have to consider moving him. His value will be at its highest. Outside of that, I think they have to sign Jeff Petrie unless they get into a position where they end up with a right-handed defenseman who's 5 years younger, who does exactly what he does and can replace him immediately. So I think we all know that that's not happening. And they have to sign that guy because they don't have somebody waiting in the wings to replace him. Whereas in Tatar's situation, they have Domi, they have Drouin, they have Lehkonen on the left side. They have solutions there where if they can get the kind of return that's expected in a deal like that, they have to make that move.
We're chatting with Eric Engels here, talking about the Montreal Canadiens, of course. I mean, if you're Mark Bergevin, aside from the obvious, are there any, sort of untouchables between now and the deadline?
Well, we know he's not going to trade Shea Weber, and he's not going to trade Carey Price. And untouchables, Nick Suzuki isn't going anywhere, and none of their top-end prospects are going anywhere, whether it's Jesperi Kotkaniemi or Ryan Poehling or Alex Romanov or Cole Caulfield. He's been adamant that he won't move them to save his job, so he's certainly not moving them in a situation where they turn into sellers. So you could list all those players as untouchables. I think you could probably add Phil Deneau and Brendan Gallagher to the list. These are guys that are going to have contracts up in 2021, but they're obviously foundational players for the Canadiens in terms of their core, so I wouldn't think for a second that either one of them would move. Lehkonen's another guy that if he was available, 30 teams would want him. So that's the exact reason why you keep him. He's a young guy, Army in the same situation. Both of them are up for contracts in a year from now, and both of them are players that they see as helping their future, especially still in their mid-20s and going into their prime. So, all the names that have been bandied about, the guys that Anthony mentioned in the last question you guys asked me, are guys that obviously there's going to be speculation about here from here to the 24th, but, you know, probably strike Petrie off the list just because they can't replace him.
Eric, I think I want to circle back to something you said a little bit earlier, just talking about this Shea Weber situation. And when we're talking about this and Weber and the deadline, we're talking about Marc Bergevin. We're talking about, this is his fifth year, I believe, with the Montreal Canadiens. That's even more. So in a situation here where it almost feels like he can't cut bait on this team because it looks bad on himself. Like, this is a situation where he has to go all in, even though I would say consensus is not the smart thing. And hearing you talk about Shea Weber, this feels like the type of decision where you say, what are you doing? This is a guy we have under contract for years to come who we're putting at risk in, you know, with a big cap hit. This feels like a conversational turning point about Bergevin and the decision-making here, because this doesn't seem very smart. Has it changed how you feel about what's going on there?
Not really. I mean, you know, they're kind of stuck in the middle with, you know, aiming towards making the playoffs, but trying to retool their roster on the fly. And I, to be honest with you, it's a mentality that I somewhat believe in when I've seen what's happened in Pittsburgh and Boston. And, you know, I think the models of franchises that continuously compete and want to do things in that vein. And I understand why Montreal has gone down that road. But, you know, all that said, I obviously don't agree with exposing Shea Weber and playing him in this situation. Same way I don't believe in starting Carey Price for a league-leading 51st game in Detroit. You know, like, Detroit, that the Red Wings have provided the ample evidence as to why the Montreal Canadiens are not going to pull something impossible off between now and the end of the season. They're a team that has beaten them, and I think it's all three matchups that they've had this year. The last place team in the league. If he's going to start doing, I think if you go back to the summer of 2018, when he set out on this reset and he was given a second life by Jeff Molson to go about this retool that he was doing, this reset, he's made a lot of good moves. Marc Bergevin has made a lot of good moves since that date and time. He needs to continue on that path because now that it seems so improbable that they're going to make the playoffs, at least he can abide by that logic, whereas the players and the coach, you know, they're going to do their job and they're going to fight and they're going to do whatever they have to do so long as they're mathematically in it. It's up to Marc Bergevin to say, hey, like, you know what? This is a failure this season. We're going to wear it and we're going to come back and do something that's better for our organization moving forward so we don't waste every other year that Shea Weber and Carey Price are under contract. So, and those two guys, no matter what people want to say about them, Shea at 34 and Carey at 32, I believe personally that those two guys are capable of doing great things over the next few years. Will they erode over time? Absolutely. Time catches up with everybody. But I still believe that they are good enough to give the Canadians what they need out of them over the next 3 years as they continue to build a team that's worthy of doing something. And it's not this team. So I think Marc Bergevin has to intervene right now and stop all this madness.
Yep. The soap opera continues in La Belle Provence. Eric, thanks so much for this. Appreciate it.
My pleasure, guys. Take care.
Take care. That's Eric Engels of Sportsnet down in Montreal. The Habs, by the way, have lost four in a row. They're 8 points out of a playoff spot. This is just so weird to me that you would do this, A, right now, also against Detroit. Like, why not wait the extra game? With all due respect to Detroit, of course. I mean, that team is not a strong team in this league. You think you'd probably take care of them. And everything you just mentioned, I mean, it just everything's trending towards Montreal being a seller. I just really can't put my finger on what's going on here, boys.
I mean, maybe I'll try to phrase it a little more carefully than I'm thinking it, but like this whole thing with Weber is an example of like where it seems to me like Bergevin would be putting his own priorities, his own wants, and his personal interests, like having this team make a push and looking like, you know, a good team, ahead of what's the best thing for the team and the franchise.
So he's feeling the heat a bit, you think?
I guess so. Yeah. I guess that is what I'm saying. It feels like a like a not very smart move.
Desperation?
It does feel like desperation. And I feel like he's a guy who's made a lot of good moves. I generally think he has done a very good job. This, to me, feels like forcing it in a situation where, man, it's just not there.
Two words. Carolina, St. Louis.
Yeah.
Both teams got in last year.
Do you get a tertiary word just for the hell of it? No.
Both teams got in last year, and you know, Carolina won a round, and St. Louis went on to win the Stanley Cup. So I think in his mind, if they get in, they have an opportunity to win a round, two rounds. And if I'm Bergevin, I'm thinking, hey, you know what? That could save my job, because he doesn't know what's going on in the future. He doesn't know if they're going to go in a different direction. But that just shows the competitive nature of Shea Weber and why he's been a captain as, you know, so many years, because there's no quit. If he has one leg, he's going to do his best to get out there. And until he can't go anymore, you know, he's going to play. He's going to play. So that's why he's a leader. That's why, you know, he deserves to compete for a Stanley Cup.
Yeah, but you got to be realistic, too, if you're Montreal. I mean, Florida's ahead of you. Buffalo wins last night. Technically, they're ahead of you as well. Like, it just, it's numbers.
But we were counting them out legit 10 days ago. What if they won those four games in a row?
Yeah, but they didn't.
But what if they did?
They didn't.
So again, they go on a five, you know, they win 6 of 8 or, you know, 8 of 10. They're back in this.
Yeah, I hope it works out for them, quite honestly. It's Nick Alberga for in for Jeff Merrick. That's Anthony Stewart and Justin
Boyle. You're not allowed back in Montreal, I'll tell you that.
I was born in Montreal. They'll always let me back. I got family in Montreal. I was born there. So
good luck going back there.
I troll every team equally. You guys know that. But I'm just confused by this whole process, and I'm sure I'm not the only one there. I'm not confused by New Jersey. And again, the interim GM of the Devils, Tom Fitzgerald, will drop by next hour. I don't think the Devils are done by any stretch, but two really good pieces of business on Sunday. We'll talk about that after this break. We'll dive into the rest of yesterday's card, including Leon Draisaitl making an even bigger case for the Hart Trophy. He was tremendous yet again. You're listening to Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, simulcasted on Sportsnet 360 and the NHL Network.
Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, welcome back to Hockey Central. It's Nick Alberga filling in for Jeff Merrick alongside Anthony Stewart and Justin Bourne. Again, next hour, the interim GM of the New Jersey Devils, Tom Fitzgerald. I still can't get over the fact that they got more for Blake Coleman than Taylor Hall, but of course, a different GM, a different time, and maybe the Devils are better off waiting to trade Taylor Hall, but it is what it is at this point in time, and now a pretty couple strong transactions here, I would say, by Tom Fitzgerald. So we'll get to that in hour number two. Let's dive in further, guys, into the Edmonton Oilers, because this NHL world's so intriguing for a variety of reasons, but the sky's falling sometimes and everything's great sometimes. And it seems like, you know, it's the latter right now when it comes to the Oilers and Leon Draisaitl. It was a big moment in this season. Clearly, Connor McDavid goes up for 2 to 3 weeks, and it was all on Draisaitl. And Justin, so far, I mean, he's been sensational for this team all season long, but the stretch here without McDavid's been incredible.
This season has been eye-opening for me in terms of Draisaitl's competitiveness, and I feel like the Tkachuk incident exposed that a little bit. Like, you know, they went to the All-Star game and he made the comments about if we're on the same ice, I'm going to skate off the, you know, skate off the rink or whatever, and that sort of made me feel like, okay, this guy cares, right? He's passionate. He's invested. Some of the stuff that, quite frankly, I had heard behind the scenes about him as a player was that there are games where he can turn it off if he's not comfortable, doesn't like the situation. And that's not the vibe. And then again, you see Connor McDavid get a, you know, miss a stretch here, and you see his motivation and his effort and his he's elevated his game. So this there's been a couple eye-opening moments this season about Draisaitl and his play that have totally changed how I feel about him. And Edmonton's got, you know, one of the elite guys in the league there, obviously.
Well, we know the knock on Edmonton at the beginning of the season. Can you explain what that was?
They're not good?
No.
Without McDavid and Draisaitl?
No, my key word of the day.
It's
it was tertiary scoring. And I think that's what they're getting now. And as much as you know, Leon Draisaitl, yeah, he is that great. He is putting the team on his back, but there's other guys stepping up, scoring big goals at big times. We saw last night Archibald scoring 2 goals and the game winner yesterday. So there's not just the regular cast of characters, because McDavid and Draisaitl can only do so much. We know they're going to get their 110 points. I know the line was 125. They're not going to hit that, but guys are stepping up at the right time. Chiasson scoring some goals. Shane had a big night, a couple weeks ago. So other guys are stepping up. Kyler Yamamoto came out of the minors and he's stepping up. I think he has 9 goals now. So there's other guys, because when the top teams are focusing on the top guys, these tertiary guys step up and get the job done.
It's a bit excessive at this point.
That may be as worthwhile a note as Draisaitl's been good in McDavid's absence, as Kyler Yamamoto has been a game changer for this team. To get another player who works like he does, can score. I think he's about a point per game since he's been called back up. But he's a second chance guy where he's always in there digging and finding pucks, and that makes a difference for a team in terms of getting chances and playing the right end of the ring. So he's been huge.
And the real deal, James Neal, is still out. When he comes back, that's more tertiary.
Yeah. Okay, that's enough. And Shawn Michaels out right now. Zach Cassian at the Sweet Chin Music out of the lineup right now. So I mean, it just adds to the resume for Leon Draisaitl. And again, there's going to be people out there that says, you know, he can't win it because Connor McDavid's on that team. I don't buy that. What he's doing in this stretch, that's why I think you always have to look at guys like Malkin who really, really step up when Crosby's out of the lineup. And I think Dave Tippett deserves a lot of credit for this team. But certainly, like, you look at Edmonton, I'm very fascinated to see what they do between now and the deadline because there's absolutely no pressure, in my opinion, on Ken Holland, right? He's there for the next 4+ years at least. You know, he's going to be patient. And I think to your point about Kyler Yamamoto is that, you know, it's a perfect, you know, situation where you send this kid, rebuild his confidence in the AHL, you call him back up, and he is flying. That's a really good point to bring up. It's just sort of sometimes often teams look at the deadline for some key contributors and some depth offense, but they're getting it from the AHL now.
Yeah. I actually just in thinking about these teams are going to operate headed towards the deadline, I kind of feel like for a team like Edmonton, the temptation of going in is a bit of a sucker's play. Like there's this temptation to say, hey, boy, if you get one more good player and you emerge from this pack and you win this division, like you have a chance in this postseason to win a couple of rounds, that dangling carrot is so close. But I feel like these are not great teams. These are not great teams at the top of that division. And if you want to win in the big picture, not just this season and going forward, you can't be sacrificing the future to, you know, for this season, because I don't think the teams are really that great. So it's tempting, but I think it'd be a sucker's play to go all in and buy right now.
That brings us back to the whole Carolina and St. Louis. And I know Daniel Negreanu is probably listening. All you need right
poker
now
legend.
is a chip in a chair. And once you get in, it's anyone's game.
No,
and you get hot goaltending.
Not.
And when you have McDavid
not NHL 20,
and Draisaitl, who they can be down 2-1 in a game and late in the third, and they can come up and get the win for you because they're that good.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I believe that good teams can finish low in the standings. Like, I do believe that, again, the Kings that won the Cup in 2012 and 14, those are good teams that finished 6th and 8th. I don't think that teams that, you know, sort of all my fancy metrics say that they're not very good and they sneak in with flawed rosters. I don't think we see those teams end up coming through. So I'm more skeptical than you, Stewie.
Yeah, I'm siding with Justin here, I'll be honest. Vancouver. I like Vancouver more than I like Edmonton. I'll say that right now, even with McDavid in the lineup. JT Miller's been a strong acquisition for that team. Quinn Hughes has had an outstanding rookie campaign on the back end. I probably like the goaltending better. What do you guys make of this last little stretch? Because this, in a nutshell, has pretty much been Vancouver's season. Hot streak, cold streak, hot streak, cold streak, and they're rather cold as of late, guys.
Just a flawed but talented team, right?
Yeah,
you know,
right.
There's enough good pieces there that they can be hot some nights. And the best thing with them is they have the goaltending, so they're going to win some hockey games over the course of the season. But you know, if you want to talk about a team that could use a little help in the depth, they're definitely one. Their back end, you know, also gets exposed at times.
Yeah, and I'm beginning to wonder if, you know, this whole Markstrom contract fiasco is becoming a bit of a distraction, right? Because, again, you could see, obviously, he didn't play last night, and they lost, 5-1 to Anaheim. So I think they need to sign him. They need to give him the equivalent of all the money. I don't know what that translates
yeah,
into.
What's that going
to
translate
I don't know what that's
to.
Converted to in Canadian dollars. But, again, they lost, you know, a pretty good player in, you know, Ferland, who's been hurt, and now he's out indefinitely now with...
That's tough.
So that's a sad story now, too. But... you know, with Vancouver, it's going to rest on, you know, how well Markstrom carries them. So I'm a little bit concerned now with the contract status now. And again, I think it's too much of a load for them to rely just on him. I know Pettersson's playing good. Brandon Sutter's stepping up as of late. JT Miller's having a pretty good season. But I like Edmonton better. And again,
really?
The Vancouver Canucks, hashtag Canucks, are probably going to be all over me in T-minus here.
You want to talk about fan bases on Twitter? Canucks Army.
They're ready to go to war at any given moment. But I like Edmonton's chances better than Vancouver.
Very well put right there. Again, that's Anthony Stewart, Justin Bourne. I'm Nick Alberga filling in for Jeff Merrick as we roll on here in Hockey Central. That's it for hour number one. Hour number two, we'll talk to Tom Fitzgerald, the interim GM of the New Jersey Devils, trades Blake Coleman. And he trades Captain Andy Green. By the way, Travis Zajac's not getting anywhere, so we'll get to that, and we'll get you set for Monday's slate of games in the NHL. This is Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, simulcasted on Sportsnet 360 and the NHL Network.
is Hockey Central with Jeff Merrick, Anthony Stewart, and Justin Bourne on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We got to change the stinger there because I'm clearly not Jeff Merrick. I'm Nick Alberga filling in here alongside Anthony Stewart and Justin Bourne. It's hour number two of Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Simulcasted on Sportsnet 360 and the NHL Network. Happy Family Day. Happy Monday to all the listeners and watchers out there in the States. And we move forward to another Monday of NHL action. And again, we get closer and closer to the NHL trade deadline. And in general, for this Maple Leafs team, they had back-to-back three-game week upcoming this one, including two games against the Pittsburgh Penguins, a very important time in this season, boys.
Yeah, these are big games. You know, as I think I mentioned in the first hour, this is the time where you need your goaltending. You know, there's going to be chances against. Right now you've got Sandin on D and Liljegren on D and Dermott's question mark. Barry gives up a few, you know, so there's some legitimate defensive questions, and you're playing a very good team that just acquired a very good player in Jason Zucker. So they're going to be calling on Freddie Anderson, presumably.
Yeah, and I think we're past the point as analysts now to sort of, you know, nitpick on what this team is and what they need. And this is the team. Okay, obviously they might make a change here and there.
Right.
And at this point of the season, we're in that fourth quarter, right? You know, game 60 to 82 here, where you just got to worry about getting points. So again, we can't sit here and try to dissect, oh, well, Pittsburgh this, Pittsburgh that. They got to find a way to get points. So with that, at this point of the season, there's going to be injuries. There's going to be guys tired. There's going to be back-to-back games. You just got to find a way to, you know, get points. So instead of, you know, nitpicking about the power play, the penalty kill, it's this time of year where the big guys, the stars, the guys making the most money, they got to step up and get this team over the hump.
Point accumulation for sure when it comes to the Maple Leafs. Let me ask you this question to further the conversation. Is there a goalie controversy brewing? What do you do if you're Sheldon Keefe? There's two games, Tuesday, Thursday, starts in Pittsburgh tomorrow night at PPG Paints Arena. When it comes to Frederick Anderson and Jack Campbell, do we see Campbell at least one of those games?
I mean, I don't think they... First off, let me answer the first question. Yeah. No, there's no goalie controversy.
I agree.
Like, just not... That's not even a thing.
Matty Marchese, you know, he has questions, but he wanted to bring that up.
Yeah.
That's coming up later on, too.
Your turn.
Yeah. You got that's a hard no on that. I think right now the most important thing is getting Freddie Anderson to where he needs to be. Like, they need to put him in a position where if they're going to have a playoff run and do any damage, they need him to be the guy.
Exactly.
You know, J.D. Bunkus mentioned in a good show earlier that Freddie Anderson's received top 10 like Vezina votes a number of years. He won or had Calder Trophy votes. Like, he's been around for a long time. He's a guy.
It's a long season, right?
It is a long season, and there are ups and downs, and he's definitely their guy.
Yeah, and he played well last night. I don't think it was a 5-goal performance that he put on it. Yeah. It was almost like he let in 2 goals, but again, it was just the timing of, you know, that minute and a half that they took off, that they really let him out to dry, that really hurt his stats.
But I do wonder, like, if he has a bad game or two, maybe they say, all right, well, Campbell's been playing well.
Well, you have to. It's not necessarily a controversy, but at this point, you just got to worry about getting points. So if Freddie's off, okay, well, maybe, you know, you've got to hit the reset button, sit for a game or two. But this team is going nowhere without Freddie Anderson. They're not going to win a round. They're not going to get by Boston. They're not going to get to the Cup Finals without Freddie being Freddie. That's a fact.
I just wonder, and I do agree, when puck tracking does come into this league, was that a 6-2 hockey game, if you know what I'm saying, right? Because to me, I was convinced it was a goal. Like, that it crossed the line, but there was no definitive evidence, so they didn't call it a goal.
How?
What?
You're talking about the one that was on his pad?
Yeah.
Okay, you got eagle eyes there?
I got laser eye surgery. These eyes are phenomenal.
Did you? Nice.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. I would
get your goggles back on.
One thing.
So you didn't see this?
I did see it. It's not a goal. If they deemed it no goal, it has to be a
definitive. Yes, definitive. I get that, but puck tracking will change that.
How? It's not like is it going to be like tennis
it's
where
be a chip
it
in
shows the,
puck.
The shadow of the puck? And
that'd be great if it was. Yeah. One thing you said earlier, I wanted to ask you more about was the identity thing. Like you said, this is the team. I think right now there's a sense that, like, what is our team? Like, are we trading a guy like Tyson Barrie, Cody Ceci? Are we getting call-ups? Do you think there's something to, like, after trade deadline, be like, okay, we know what we have. Like, guys can stick to the role a little better?
Yeah, I think when you, at this point, again, they're not, I don't think they're going to make any major moves. I think the time for that was around that Taylor Hall time or, you know, a couple weeks ago, during the deadline, it's more about complimentary pieces. So, yeah, you might add a depth guy. You might add a PK guy. You might, you know, add somebody that's going to help complement. But this team rests on its top four guys, and it's top 2D that are obviously hurt right now, and they're goaltending. So that's when it's all said and done, this season's going to come down to, did the top four do their job? Did they score the timely goals at the right time? And you know, is Matthews going to finish with, is he going to finish with, 49, or is he going to, you know, push 60? Is Marner going to now keep continuing to drive the play? Is Tavares going to score that timely goal in the power play? Is Freddie Anderson going to step up and make that cluster of saves in the third period to, you know, help the team get back
cluster
to a win?
Cluster being the key word. Yes. It's not going to be one.
So that's going to be the story of this season, not, well, did the bottom six, did Clifford get his five fights? So it's when you're doing an analysis of the game, you tend to nitpick, but at this point it's about the main storylines.
Yeah, and you look at the market too. I mean, if the market, and maybe it's a tough gauge yesterday, what the Devils got for those two respective players, a 37-year-old rental, I get he's your captain, but a second and a prospect, I mean, that's a pretty steep price. And if you're the Maple Leafs, they've already dealt some of those assets away. I don't know what you have to deal. Jeremy Bracco, and then what? You know?
Right. Yeah, that's a fair point too.
And everyone's talking about, well, let's trade, you know, let's trade Tyson Berry. Okay, you're going to trade Berry.
you
don't want to sign Muzzin. Dermott, you got to get him on the cheap. You got to trade Tyson Berry. So who you're left is you're going to be left with Sandin, Liljegren, and Marinson when it's all said and done. Yeah, so you got to sign some of these guys. Yeah. You can't just be trading away all these assets. This defense core, you got to keep some, because as you can see over the last couple of years, it's too hard to add these assets. They've been looking for a red shot defenseman now for how many years that can do the job. So now they're talking about, well, let's bring in PK Subban. Well, isn't that Tyson Berry at a higher cap
exactly.
rate? So and this goes back to my thing. You got to address this in the offseason. And again, Leafs Forever Twitter, I'm ready to draw my sword and hashtag it, that one of the top four has to go, and you got to bring in a top D-man. You got to bring in a top paid D-man. You got to bring in a Pietrangelo. I know Drew's probably listening right now, a Doughty type, because that's going to help get this team over the top, not just trying to add guys on the cheap that are going to complement your top four offense.
You know, surprisingly, I do agree with you. And I think the guy who wears 88 makes the most sense. He made $6.9 million a year. He's what 26 goals, 25 goals.
All the inflammatory things you said on the show tonight.
Yeah,
that's
I agree. And we'll go have a root beer after this and talk about it more.
I'm busy for the year.
But that's what it boils down to. And again, I know Justin's sitting there. That's you know, the D-line. But it's
sell high. I mean, that's, and they're not doing it now, clearly, but it's something I think you have to look at in the summer, Justin. You know, like they've made their bed. Now it's time to lie in it the way I see it, right?
Yeah, no.
Sadly.
But what are you going to do to fix it? You can't just say, we're going to go get another guy that's, cheap, but he can really, you need to get, just like, you know, Matthews is going to score 50. Just like, you know, Tavares is going to be good on the power. You need to get a guy on defense. You know exactly what you're getting. You need a superstar. You do.
Yeah. And you're right that it's nearly impossible to acquire those guys. They don't come easy. They don't come cheap. I do believe that when Kyle Dubas constructed this team and paid those guys, what do you say? We can and we will about paying them and keeping them.
31 thoughts.
I think he wants to challenge the notion that you can't win with offensive-minded skill guys. I think this is his it hasn't really been tested the way that he wants to see this core go forward. So I don't – not only do I not see it happening, I think trading a guy who, you know, has a pretty affordable cap hit in William Nylander versus his contribution, I understand the point about they need someone in that back end, and I don't know where it's going to come from, but I just don't think you start by moving off what I see as a plus asset versus their contract.
Yeah, and I just think from the beginning that acquisition of Tyson Berry was just so interesting on so many fronts that I think people, you know, who watch this game inside and outside of this market as well, Tyson Berry's pretty much, in my opinion, maybe a little less, has been Tyson Berry from what he was in Colorado, an elite power play defenseman, puck mover. He's never been known for his defensive play, but then you slot in a guy like that, a right-handed shooting guy in Toronto, and you expect the world of him. I just think it's been unrealistic, the expectation when it comes to Tyson Berry in this market. And I just, at the time of the trade, I was a bit surprised because they essentially brought in, you know, I think Morgan Riley's actually better defensively, clearly, than Tyson Berry, but they brought in that type of player when, to your point, Anthony, they needed a guy more attention to detail defensively speaking. Like a Jake Muzzin.
Yeah, so is it safe to say that Berry was a left-handed gardener? They let him go to market.
Analysis, yeah.
So again, it's just frustrating now because they've had some time to sort of shore this up, and every time you try to do the math on this defense core, it all comes down to, well, we don't have enough money because we're paying the top four. So again, I'm glad I'm not in Kyle Dubas' spot, because he had to pay his top guys, but going forward to put this team over the top, what are they going to do? What are they going to do to, you know, fix this problem. That's not a Band-Aid solution. And people are talking about, you know, Jake Muzzin. Yeah, you got to sign him for 4 years. Give him 5 years, because he's one of those guys, just like Nazem Kadri. When he's gone, you're not really going to notice how important he is to this team until he's gone.
Yeah.
Right? By the way, I also would like to say that, you know, my opinion of Nylander does not preclude the fact that I do. I'm not saying I don't think that's a worthwhile discussion, because I'm sure in their office with Dubas and the rest of the crew, they're having that same talk. What do we do? We need a defenseman. I'm sure this is a talk they're having and would at least float out there to see. Like, there was talk of them getting, was it Brody from Calgary?
TJ Brody. Well, he was part of the Kadri trade, that Kadri didn't want to go to Calgary, but Brody was going to be in
it. You know, they weren't necessarily looking for a Tyson Barry type player. He was the best of what they could get, to fill that role. So I'm sure this is a talk that they've had. And it's just a matter of, they don't feel like they've been able to find.
But they got to do a blockbuster. They have to do a blockbuster via, you know, free agency and bring in the, you know, the proposal like they did for Tavares with the big screen or, but they have to, And again, William Nylander is playing amazing. He's a big part of this team, but we're not talking about, hey, are they getting in the, we got to start talking Stanley Cup with this group pretty soon, because, you know, everyone thinks their windows, you know, this young guy, 7 years, 8 years. Some of these guys might not be here. Some of these guys might be gone.
Well, look at the number one goal. He's got, 2 years left after this, right?
And again, so that time is coming soon where their window's closing and they got to start making major moves now. But again, I don't think this season's lost. I still think they can make the playoffs. Freddie Anderson is a top goalie in the NHL. Their offense is that great. But this defense question is going to be a question mark until they address it. Not with just a Band-Aid solution, but a permanent solution. And that's a guy with cost certainty that's locked in. That's a star. That's a superstar. That's an all-star that maybe, like I mentioned before, scoring 50 in 04, in 05, like Danny Heatley. They need an all-star defenseman. Simple as that.
Yeah, to me, that's exactly
it. That shoots right.
Yeah, and again.
And a 6'3".
Yeah. If you have kids at home and you want to groom them to something, right-handed shooting defenseman for sure, because they get paid all the coin in this league, but they're just so hard to find. Like, Matt Dumba's a guy. Minnesota's been busy the last little while. Maybe he goes by the deadline, but I think it's more so a move you make in the offseason. I do agree, though. This Maple Leafs team, yeah, they're flawed, but I think we've known this for a while. This team will go where the big boys take them. Marner, Matthews, Nylander, John Tavares, they're going to guide this ship. They're going to will them to somewhere. That's, you know, my breakdown of them. And we'll see if, A, this team makes the playoffs, and B, who they play in the playoffs. But it's up to those guys. You classify yourselves as some of the best players on this planet, and they have with their contracts. Now it's time to prove it, is it not?
It is. We had a short debate before we came on air, and Stewie and I had this last week about, you know, the Leafs' potential first-round matchup. We got some heat for saying we thought Boston was maybe the preferred team. But the end of the story is with this Leafs team, who are they beating? Of Boston, Tampa, maybe they fall to the wild card spot and they get Washington. Like, they need to be healthy. They need to make some addition, in my mind. Otherwise, it's going to be an early exit.
Well, it's all about, too, like, getting hot, right? Like, you want to peak at the right time. And we'll see if this happens with Tampa. Boston really hasn't faced adversity all season. Again, it's so easy to bring it back to the Lightning last year. Faced nothing. They were unbelievable. Then, you know, you dominate Columbus in the first period of game one, and the rest was history, as we know. But I think if you're Sheldon Keefe, and again, you're assuming this team plays well enough to get into the playoffs, you just want things to trend in the right direction, right? Morgan Rielly sounds like his return in the next month and a half. Andreas Johnsson, at some point you think he's going to come back. Ilya Mikheyev, I think, understated in his value on this team. You just want things to trend in the right direction. And I'll add, you're notwithstanding last night, and again, it was a back-to-back, Toronto has been a bit better defensively, and I think that's been the compensation. They're not scoring the way they did in that big-time stretch. So I think to pull some positives out of this whole thing, I think you just want to trend in the right direction if you're Sheldon Keefe's squad here.
Just keep some pucks out of your net more than anything. You know, just
protect the house, right?
Like, yeah, just looking at this, their goals for and goals against, it's not a whole lot of teams giving up as many goals as the Maple Leafs do, end up having a lot of playoff success. So
yeah, they'll be at 200 pretty soon here. And I think in the whole entire NHL, there's 1, 2, 3 other teams that have 200 goals against.
Yeah. So 3 teams worse in the NHL in terms of total goals again. So they got some work to do.
They
shoring
do.
Up the backs.
Meantime, some news and notes out of Colorado. Philip Grubauer, lower body injury. There's no timetable. So if you play fantasy hockey, Pavel Francouz is the guy who's going to shoulder most of the load. And maybe, I think at this point, considering, Grubauer has been banged up quite a bit this year, I think Colorado might have to look at adding a tertiary netminder here. Not to slot that word in. We're just it's been brought a lot on this program, but I think you may look at another veteran coming into that fold there because they're a playoff team. They're a strong team, but you've got to sort of insulate that situation a bit more. And such a harmless play too. Like, yeah, and I'm not sure if you guys watched that Stadium Series game back on the weekend. It was like vintage Jonathan Quick in that game, by the way. But just a harmless play. And Grubauer is another goalie. It's such a volatile position these days, you know?
Yeah, I think goaltenders would argue that they're the not as well protected as the other positions, which I don't know if that's true or not, but I think they would definitely make that case. You heard Blake Holman's name tied to Colorado earlier in the day.
You can say that.
I wonder if Colorado isn't sniffing around at making an improvement, because to me, that's a team that is – you know, a real threat to win the West, and, you know, one more addition there, and that could put them over the top and be one of the favorites, I would say.
Well, Nazem Kadri, again, out 4 to 6 weeks, and I think depth is the name of the game. You look at St. Louis, look at Pittsburgh the last couple of years, and I think you just want depth going into the playoffs, especially if you're Colorado. You know, you have the big boys there, the big three in the top line. You have Cale Makar, all-world defenseman. I think in a perfect world, Colorado would like to add a defenseman, too, by the deadline. Just short things up, because that Central, boys, is going to be a dogfight, not only to get there to the playoffs, but in the Stanley Cup playoffs, they're going to beat the hell out of each other. Like, it's crazy.
What's concerning for teams in the Central is St. Louis's record. You know, they're 2-6-2 in their last 10 games.
It's the Bieber curse, yes.
By the way, can you please lay that out?
I got to find this tweet. I got a lot of tweets. I couldn't believe it the other day. 75,000 tweets. It's like, get a real job and go out or something, Nick Alberga.
But Jordan Binnington, since the Bieber exchange, has not goaltended nearly as well. Like, a lot of the Blues' success hinged on how he turned things around for them last season. You know, they're kind of going the opposite directions of the way things went for them last year, and it's mirrored by the success, or the, in this case, the lack of success that Binnington's been having.
Yeah, so it's around an .885 save percentage since about late December when that whole story came out. And again, it's the ebbs and flows, but it's just weird to me that the Blues are experiencing their hangover in the second half and not the first half. Last time I drank, it was, you know, the first 12 hours of a day, not the last 12 hours, and I felt like, oh, good, I shouldn't have been here, you know? Like, it's interesting, but again, you do forget how long a season is. I think St. Louis will rectify that situation. Another team you would think Doug Armstrong's going to be all in on trying to, you know, get this team back to the Stanley Cup and win another Stanley Cup. I mean, it just last year shows how difficult it is truly to get there. And for St. Louis, they better stop the bleeding soon because they're in a really, really strong competitive division.
Yeah, but I think they had some wiggle room with that start that they had the first half, right? And let's keep in mind, Tarasenko will be back, I think. Coming soon. So they get him coming back. They add a piece maybe here or there, maybe another defenseman. They're back to business. So I think the problem is now that all the other teams in that division's spiral was well documented. We know Dallas had the awful start. Nashville was, you know, before, you know, 10 days ago was awful. Winnipeg had a bit of a lull. So I think that lull that these other teams have gone through now is highlighting now St. Louis is going through because these other teams are playing better. And you know, people are surprised right now, the road trip that the Dallas Stars had. They're sitting now atop of the Central Division. So it's a bit of a dogfight, but they got the goaltending, they got the depth, they got the offense and the proper defenseman. St. Louis, they have to be one of the favorite coming out of the Central and the Western Conference.
I'll list a couple of the games, the five games tonight, and you guys could add what you'd like. I call it the Mike Hoffman revenge game. I wonder if they'll retire his number in San Jose. The Sharks and the Florida Panthers tonight, of course, he was a Shark for a quick cup of tea in the offseason. Anaheim at Calgary, the Flames coming off a dismantling loss to Chicago. David Riddick, since the stick flip, has not been good. Arizona and the New York Islanders, Washington and Vegas. And again, Tampa Bay at Colorado, potential maybe Stanley Cup preview in that one, guys.
Yeah, that's a great game. I mean, probably if I were to pick a team in each conference to go to the Cup final as of today, that's it right there. Washington Vegas is also another competitor for that conversation.
They played in the Cup final, didn't they, recently?
Yes, two very
the save.
Two very, very good games tonight. I also a couple of hunches tonight. If you're a gambling man, you gamble, right?
But I dabble, yes.
Dabble a little bit. I like the Islanders and Arizona tonight, and I like Calgary bouncing back against Anaheim after Anaheim took it to them a week ago. So the Islanders, I think when you trade for a guy like Andy Green, it's not like Andy Green's going to make us way better, but it's saying to the team that they still have a belief in this team and that they still want to be competitive and they're going to be buyers more than sellers. And I don't know. I think there's something to the that motivational factor that, all right, we're a pretty good team. They believe in us. Let's get her done.
Well, here's an, and we'll go with Tom Fitzgerald, the interim GM of the New Jersey Devils, next segment. But for a variety of reasons, this was the right move for the Islanders to bring in a veteran like Andy Green. The correlation to Lou Lamoriello, the former GM of the New Jersey Devils. On top of that, the last couple games, like, you got to be smart with your young defenseman. Noah Dobson's had his struggles in the first little while in the NHL. You got to insulate. To bring in a veteran just to teach him the ways, even for the next couple months, I think is vital. You know, the Islanders still searching for offense. I don't know if they get it between now and the deadline. They've been shut out in back-to-back games, the Golden Knights and the Nashville Predators. So I think they score a goal tonight. We'll start there. But I do I do expect a defensive battle in that one. You're bang on. Anaheim's in the back-to-back. You destroy the Vancouver Canucks. Calgary's going to be a bit fired up, I would think, for this one, Stewie, no?
We're talking about, you said Calgary, sorry?
Calgary and Anaheim, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And Calgary's in that dogfight right now in that Pacific Division. I'm looking at it right now. They get a win now. They're jumping up ahead of, hopefully, the Vegas Golden Knights. But Vegas, too, they win. They're first. They're tied for first in that division. So we've been talking about this dogfight 1 through 5 now for, I think, the last 2 weeks. So I think Calgary, if they put a couple wins, couple more wins together, they can help, you know, hopefully pass a Vancouver team that's been struggling as of late.
By the way, a daily fantasy play I'd go after tonight, Chandler Stephenson, at home to the Washington Capitals, a team that threw him away for nothing. He's been unbelievable since going over to the Vegas Golden Knights, so watch out for that. With the break, other side, we'll touch base with a busy man, Tom Fitzgerald, the interim GM of the New Jersey Devils. He'll drop by. We'll talk about Andy Green. We'll talk about Blake Coleman, and also the work ahead over the next week or so leading up to the February 24th trade deadline at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. It's Nick Alberga filling in for Jeff Merrick alongside Anthony Stewart and Justin Bourne. And you're listening to Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, simulcasted on Sportsnet 360 and the NHL Network.
Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, it's Nick Alberga in for Jeff Merrick alongside Anthony Stewart and Justin Bourne here on Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, simulcasted on Sportsnet 360 and the NHL Network. Again, we get closer to the NHL trade deadline at 3 p.m. Eastern Time next Monday. And among the busy teams so far, clearly the New Jersey Devils in the last 24 hours making two moves. Blake Coleman goes over to the Tampa Bay Lightning, of course. And Andy Green, they trade their captain to the New York Islanders. We're so happy to bring in the interim GM of the New Jersey Devils himself. It is Tom Fitzgerald. What's going on, Tom?
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on. Well, there's always lots going on. A little quieter today. Yesterday was a busy day, of course.
we'll start with Andy Green, okay? Because he traded your captain, has meant a lot to that organization. How difficult was it for you to make a move like that? I get he was a rental. I get he's in a UFA year. He's 37. But how difficult was that move to make?
Yeah, to be honest with you, any move you make is difficult because of the emotions and the reality of a player moving on. With Andy, the time and the sweat equity they put into this organization for the 14 years he was here, not only on the ice, but as a leader in the locker room, in the community, he was a fan favorite. It is very hard. However, he had a no movement clause, full no trade. So this is something that he had to okay. And if he didn't, we were good with that, you know, because of the quality he still brought to this organization. So it just happened to be the team across the river, and you know, everything worked out well. And he's excited about the opportunity to get back in the playoffs and play meaningful games down the stretch here and into the playoffs.
Tom, I think we'll bring it around to the other trade as well in a moment here, but I wanted to start with one sort of overarching question for the Devils organization in this year. One of the things that we heard in the wake of Ray Shiro's you know, firing was that there was an issue with cohesion and all the units of the management system working together. I'm wondering how the decision-making process is working there now, if you've changed anything, just sort of a general big picture there.
I think that's a misconception. Ray Shiro was a collaborative general manager who included everybody in our hockey ops department for their always asking opinions, always asking. At the end of the day, it's all the information that he gathered was stocked, and he's the one who had to make decisions. That's what the manager does. No different than what I'm doing. It's a very collaborative model, and I need to know everybody's opinion on things. And at the end of the day, it's going to be my recommendations whether we trade a guy, hold on to a guy, whatever. But it's my recommendation. So I learned this from Ray. So it was identical.
Right.
Chatting with Tom Fitzgerald, the interim GM of the New Jersey Devils. The Blake Coleman deal, it goes over to Tampa. I think you got really, really good value in that trade. That's my analysis, at least. How long have you been working on that deal, and sort of what's the market looking like right now?
Well, to be quite honest and transparent, when I was asked to take over back on January 12th or 13th, I think it was the 12th, it wasn't short. It was very quickly I started receiving phone calls from teams and asking what I was doing. At that moment, middle of January, I was drinking water out of a fire hose and wasn't sure where to start. You know, I think the first thing first was just collect my thoughts and present our ownership an outline or a framework of where we need to go, what we need to do. Then the phone started ringing, people started asking about my players, the double players. And then the more calls you get for a player like Blake, you start thinking, geez, maybe I need to start listening. But by no means was I shopping any of my players, to be honest. People just start calling and asking about, non-playoff teams and their players, and I was listening. So with Blake, I never really thought it was serious enough to go down a path to trade him until just recently, because it became abundantly clear how wanted this kid was for the obvious, his play this year. He's a hell of a hockey player. He's going to bring that character, that energy, that speed, PK, and he can finish right now. And his salary is really good for what he's doing. He's outplaying that at the moment. So it was clear to me that I really had to think long and hard on what I would do with him. I didn't want to trade Blake Coleman. He's an identity player for the New Jersey Devils. He was. Those guys don't grow on trees. Those are the guys that you want your team to be. You know, you want guys like Jack and Nico to watch a player like this and how hard he works and lead by example. Good person. He's a really good person, but it was hard. So with that being said, the return was just something that I couldn't pass up. But I had multiple teams. Like I said, I get down to multiple teams that were really serious about Blake Coleman.
Tom, you mentioned Jack Hughes and Nico Hischier. There's been a lot of, adversity, ups and downs, coaching changes, GM changes. How have they handled that adversity being such young players in the National Hockey League?
Great question, Stewie. It's not easy, to be honest with you. It's not easy, especially, those two players in particular and how young they are and coming in and the amount of change that's happened. I'm just trying to stabilize this ship right now and put them at ease at things, just have them worry about playing hockey. Nico's obviously a couple years older than Jack. The maturity level that he's gone through or the experience he's gone through has matured him over the last couple years. I'm sure it affects him, but it's not affecting him visibly on the ice anyway. But, can't turn back the clock. We're in this situation. I'm in this situation. Elaine Nazardine's in this situation because of underperforming. We all did, from coaches, from management to the players. We underperformed starting October, November, December to get to this point. Fired coach, fired general manager, and now trying to piece this back together. So it's affected everybody, but these players, Anthony, you just play. Players play, manage, coach. Do control what you can control, and that's all they're doing right now.
Obviously, the plan for the season from the start of the year till now has changed, and you've sort of had to reset your sights a little bit on what you consider a win from this point till the end of the season. So when you're sitting there after the Stanley Cup's been handed out, I wonder, what's a win for the New Jersey Devils, both between now and the trade deadline and then for the remainder of the season?
A win?
How are you sitting there that you feel good about what's happened the rest of the way this season? What would you like to see play out with your organization from now till the end of the year?
Well, you know, starting yesterday and moving forward to the deadline, you know, there are going to be some moves here. Wins, I'm not looking at that and patting myself on the back. I wish I didn't have to move anybody. I wish we were in a playoff spot. I wish we were challenging for a playoff spot with a core group that we can move forward and continue to add pieces and watch the growth of these young players grow and watch Mackenzie Blackwood become a number one goalie. Like, that's what I was hoping. We all were hoping that. We all wanted that. We all felt really good about ourselves at the beginning of this season. That's not the case. What's a win? A win is watching these players continue to grow and get better. It brings great joy watching Mackenzie Blackwood not be overworked, but what he's putting in now when he's playing his 50% of the games. It excites us about what the future looks like in net. It excites us about Jack and what's he going to look like at 22, 23. And Nico, how he's continued to grow and develop. But I'll say this, guys, it's a man's league. You can't just have all kids in your lineup. You have to have men. And that's my job here, is not to burn this thing down to the ground. It's to keep this group competitive by adding men to the lineup that can help support these pillars, I call, for our organization.
I like that. Chatting here with Tom Fitzgerald, the interim GM of the New Jersey Devils. So within reason, like, are you open to pretty much anything between now and the NHL trade deadline next week?
I sure am.
Yeah. That includes Subban, Palmieri.
I'm not shopping any of my players, but if teams want to call me on it, I'll listen. But I'm not looking to get rid of them. Like I said, we need men in our lineup, and those two bring character. They're leaders. Nothing's off the table, I guess. But I'm not looking to burn this thing down.
What would you consider to have been pleasant surprises for you? You mentioned Mackenzie Blackwood, who I think is, you know, he's been really good for you this season. And some of your young players seem to be coming along nicely too. What do you consider so far this season as pleasant surprises?
Well, you said it. Mackenzie was that question mark after the strong finish he had last year with us. You just don't know with goaltenders. I'm not sure we saw the true Mackenzie Blackwood at the beginning of the year when winning is so important, and when you're not winning, he gives you the best chance to win every night, and you're playing, and then you try to evaluate that, and he had some down nights, and it's tough to evaluate those down nights when a 22-year-old was playing as much as he was. So we peeled that back a bit here. The game plan with him was to build back some games played and get him some normal reps. Practices have been very important for that young player. And now I think we're seeing the benefits of pulling him back, because he's a hell of a goaltender. Up front, you see the growth in Nico in the past couple months and how he's able to take over games at times. In just a short period, and it's easy to get excited about it, but we're trying to control that excitement and let these players, especially Nico and Jack, just continue to grow one day at a time.
All right, Tom, we got like 83 hours of coverage next Monday, so continue to be busy. Thanks so much for this. Really appreciate it, okay?
Okay, see you guys. Thanks.
There you have it. Tom Fitzgerald, the interim GM of the New Jersey Devils, been very active the last 24 hours or so.
Yeah, I really loved the point he made about this being, you know, a man's league. Like, you know, it's not a boys' league. And this is as much as logically you think as a fan, like, get the kids up here. See what the kids can do. Let's give the kids a chance. It's like you put just the kids in there and they're going to get run over by grown men.
Yeah, and you can see this weighs heavily on him. And he's taking this job, obviously, really, really serious. And he doesn't want to just burn it down. And again, he didn't take offense to your question about what's a win. He obviously wants to be in the playoffs. He wants to build this team the right way. And, that comes through, obviously you got to trade some assets, but they're getting a lot of assets. It's going to take time, but the future definitely is bright in New Jersey, because you have two first overall picks, and say what you want about their development and where they're at. They were number one picks for a reason. And once they become men, they're going to be probably the top men in the NHL.
Yeah, not to forget, too, I mean, they've really stockpiled first-round picks here in this upcoming draft in Montreal, and we know the top 10 sounds to be very, very strong, but they now have three first-rounders, no second or third so far for New Jersey. But it's so fascinating to me that what back in the summer they were like the dark horse team to maybe do something substantial here.
Sure.
But I think they really overestimated what they had in between the pipes, and that's nothing against Mackenzie Blackwood. Maybe they expected more clearly out of Corey Schneider, another difficult year for him. Louis Domingue has been okay, in my opinion. But I think it starts there. And certainly the irony of an organization that has just been, the backbone has been goaltending in the Marty Brodeur era specifically, where you didn't even have to worry about that. That's the biggest thing I think looking forward right now for this regime is trying to rectify. And that's nothing on Blackwood. I think he's a good piece. He's still really, really young. You have to insulate that position a bit more here.
Yeah, that's quite possible. And yeah. and there was a lot of question marks about how it was all going to come together.
They made a lot of change,
right? They went into the season, and we saw it, you know, here in Toronto where that was part of it too, where a lot of turnover can lead to a rocky start, and a rocky start can feed on itself. And, you know, they weren't able to stop the negative momentum going, but there's still a lot of talent and a lot of good things there. So I think it's wise to sit there and say, all right, we're not going to tear it down to the ground. We're gonna give these kids a chance to succeed every night.
Yeah, and I tried to get the quote out of him when I asked about Subban and Palmieri, but he was not giving on that front. And pretty much like we got the answer we were looking
for. Can't put all his business on French Street.
Yeah,
no, he's got
exactly.
to do deals in the background, in the shadows.
We all got jobs to do, but I think pretty much he you know, indirectly said he's open for business within reason. I mean, they're not trading Hughes, any of those guys. He's sure. But somebody calls about Subban, you take that call. Kyle Palmieri's got a family-friendly deal contract, too. I think you have to look at that. And I think indirectly what he told us about Blake Coleman, didn't want to trade the guy, but the fact of the matter is he's 28. He's got 1 year left in his deal, makes 1.8. You get a first and a top prospect, you got to make that trade, right?
Yeah, he's just such a coveted asset at that price and the type of game he brings. I think he's 13th in the NHL in hits to go with his over 20 goals. Like he brings an element to the game that's highly sought after.
It's just to me, like, and I get it's a different time, but they almost, you could argue, got more for Blake Coleman at 1 year than Taylor Hall, who won the Hart Trophy 2 years back, rental. Like it's... And hindsight's 20/20, but maybe if they waited, built up that market a bit more, could they have got a bigger haul for Taylor Hall?
I don't know enough about the prospects.
They got Kevin Ball, defenseman.
Justin Hall.
Yeah, there he goes.
It's Kevin Ball. And they got Nolan Foote, who's a forward, part of the Foote lineage. And there were two Foots in Tampa, now just one Foote. But I think all in all, a passing grade for me in New Jersey the last 24 hours. But again, it's just still incredible to me that we were really talking about this team in the summer as a bona fide playoff team. A lot of people are like, they're making the playoffs. They might do and make some noise. But again, it hasn't gone according to script for some of the guys they brought in there, namely a guy like PK Subban's really, really struggled this season.
He has, and that's, you know, obviously why his name is coming up. He seems to be a half step slower than he has looked in years past. So that'll be an interesting one. Nikita Gusev was almost a no-risk addition to me. That was a worthwhile trade just to see what you can get there. And he's someone that maybe they thought there might be more there too. But there was a lot of maybes that could have made this season a great success the reality is what it ended up being.
It is interim city right now in New Jersey, interim Alain Nazardine, former National Hockey Leaguer as well. Pretty respectable record, 13-13-6 under Alain Nazardine after John Hines was canned. Hines now with the Predators, 10-7-0, by the way, as you guys know, as I count on Twitter every day, the records when coaching changes are made. I'm running out of characters, though.
Is that a troll job, or you just like to keep the people updated?
I do that every year, especially when I worked at SiriusXM NHL Network Radio. I just think people want to know numbers, and especially after last year with St. Louis making the coaching change, I just think it's one of those things. It's my civic duty to update people. With that in mind, it's my civic duty to hit the break. And on the other side, I was told your producer always seems to have questions and he likes asking them on TV and the radio. So we're going to do that. Maddie Marchese. Maddie has questions, award-winning segment to wrap up this edition of Hockey Central. Nick Alberga filling in for Jeff Merrick alongside Anthony Stewart and Justin Bourne. And you're listening to Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, simulcasted on Sportsnet 360 and the NHL Network.
More Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Maddie has questions. Let's do it. It's Nick Alberga filling in for Jeff Merrick alongside Anthony Stewart and Justin Bourne, now joined by the fantastic producer extraordinaire, Maddie Marchese. Question time.
He's just trying to be nice because he wants to come back.
Yeah, I know. I've been, this is my third time doing the show and I want to be back for a fourth time.
Good. Yes. Good job.
What's going on?
Some things that we missed. Tampa Bay's winning streak up to 10 games after beating Philly on Saturday. And Mackenzie Blackwood was pretty good last night. 52 saves beating the Jackets, who are 0-2-3 in their last five.
Has Elvis left the building?
Might have.
It's coming.
No, they got their points. They got a point. Like we said, it's Pac-Man.
Born accumulation guy over here.
It's family day, and of course, we're here. But who is your favorite sports family? And you two guys cannot pick your own. Okay?
Oh, man. Can I pick the Gillies?
No.
Okay.
I got the Hearts.
The Owen Hearts?
The Hearts.
The Wrestling Hearts?
Yeah. Wrestling's first family.
Well, I know what Stewie's going to say.
What?
You say the Stalls.
Yeah,
I was going to say Stalls.
Yeah,
it could be any sport.
My dad played on a line with two Sutters, with Brent and Dwayne at one point. So I'll lean towards the Sutters.
So I'll say Stalls. And the one thing I can say, they're going to have kids that are going to play in the NHL, and they're going to be large players. Animals. I remember we went to a clown coming out to one of the events or whatever like that, and Eric's son was like two, and the clown was having a conversation with him as if he was like 7 years old. Hey, what is your name? And the kid's two, and he just starts crying. But that's how big his
large Stall.
I'll go just to be different. I was going to say the Stalls. I'll go with the Tkachuk family. I think the last couple of years, it's been sort of cool to see both these brothers in the league at the same time and knowing what their dad did for a long period of time. So I'll go there.
Honorable mention, the Mannings would be up on that list. Okay, yeah. So it's Michael Jordan's birthday today. And in honor of Michael Jordan, we know that his baseball career wasn't very good. But if you had to pick a sport that you think an NHL player could translate to and play professionally, what would it be?
Jeez.
Matt brought some questions today, didn't he?
Yeah. Think. I would say ringnet or curling.
Figure skating.
I would say football. Again, my brother played football. Yeah. He had an opportunity probably to get some scholarships. Really, hockey players are in tremendous shape. They're very cerebral. They know how to read plays. So I think the hockey would translate to football really well.
Yeah, that's a good one. I like the idea of games where, maybe not so stop and start, but you kind of play within the action. Soccer has a lot of strategic similarities. I know guys play a lot of two-touch. Can I vote for soccer?
I'm going soccer too. Yeah. Because of that, they already play before the game. They get injured sometimes, if you know what I'm saying.
Yes,
somebody in the room actually knows what that's like.
Yep. Yeah.
I would have said golf. That seems to be the easy one.
You're right. Okay.
As reported on Saturday headlines, the Leafs and Jake Muzzin are closing in on a 4-year extension. A, do we like the term? And B, is the cap number over or under $5.5 million?
It's right at $5.5 million, no?
You're calling a push?
Yeah. I am.
I'll say they find a way to sneak it under.
Wow.
But not by much. I just think it's great. I like the term. He just strikes me as a guy whose game doesn't or won't deteriorate too badly as he gets older.
And just stays the same.
Well, because he's like Hainsey. He's not doing it on speed or power or aggression. No. He's does it with his brain and his positioning. So I think it'll age fine.
Yeah, four years is good for both sides. And I consider it a win or spectacular if Kyle Dubas can get him in under $6 million.
Yeah, I like that too. I think it's going to be 4x5.5, just my opinion. And I just think his importance will be brought up come the Stanley Cup playoffs if the Leafs can get there. I think we saw it last spring, and we'll see it again this spring if they can get there.
We saw the Leafs' defensive performance yesterday, and seeing that Morgan Rielly would be out until at least the end of March, did the price for a defenseman for Toronto go up in a minute 31 of yesterday's game? Like if you're a GM watching that, do you go, they may need one?
And then
more
Sandin
than
got
else.
Hurt yesterday for a bit of time too.
Yeah, didn't do many favors, did it? But the desperation is certainly there. But as we mentioned on the show, I just don't know what they have to really move outside of a top four guy. So they definitely need some help.
It's just one of those things like nobody's going to help you out, right? It was like the backup goalie. Nobody wanted to help him out. Then they paid a pretty decent price to get that. I just don't think there's somebody out there right now who's going to make sense.
Is the hatred in the league for the Leafs enough that other GMs
think
so as well that they just
no,
say
at
there's
the end
a
of
premium?
The day, it might seem like that, but business is business. Every team has wants and needs, and if the price is right, every team, as we just heard Fitzgerald mention that, every team's open for business.
Yeah. Get the guys you want. Who cares where they come from?
Everybody has a price, according to
Where's the gift, Stewie?
quickly, because we got 30 seconds. Nashville Predators, 1 point out of a playoff spot. Buyers at the deadline?
I don't see how they can be after this season. It would be...
We thought they were dead, though.
Yeah.
Like Shea Weber.
Shea Weber was dead. Yeah. Then he's back tomorrow.
I say they stay the course.
All right. I think they're going to stay the course as well. I mean, they're more of a team that makes moves in the offseason. I'd like to thank everybody for having me here today. So I appreciate
dealing with Nick.
Great job.
Take care, everybody.